pounds heavier and had dark red hair shot through with silver, seethed with anger.
Shit! He must hate being the father of such a gaudy slut. How many of these kids are his?
This was too much for the younger woman. Despite her smaller stature, she yelled in incoherent fury and threw a haymaker punch that caught the older woman on the side of the head, making her stagger backward with a startled yelp. She recovered quickly, however, and charged back at her opponent with a snarl, catching her under the chin with a roundhouse blow that would have rendered her unconscious had it properly connected. It didn't, but it was still hard enough to knock her backward into the rest of the women, who were now beginning to draw up sides for the fight. It looked as if it could get out of hand quickly, and Christy and Mildred knew they had to act. They also knew that it would establish the companions' authority well if they were the ones to quell the disturbance rather than the men. The two Mandrake women were locked together now, wrestling in a small circle. The other women were closing in, swapping insults with those on the opposite side. There were some blows being flung, but so far it hadn't escalated into a full-scale fight. And it wouldn't if Mildred and Christy had anything to do with it. Both women were off their horses and into the midst of the fledgling fight before anyone had a chance to react. A glance between them determined that Christy would take the older woman and Mildred the younger. Christy was slightly taller than Mildred and would have the height and leverage advantage to overcome the weight of the older woman, whereas Mildred's lesser height would enable her to fight face to face with the younger woman. But first, they had to get them apart. The speed and unexpectedness of their attack gave them an advantage in breaking through, both women using their elbows and heavy boots to crack shins and ribs, parting the crowd. It didn't take a second for Mildred and Christy to reach the center of the action. The two Mandrake women were still locked together, neither giving ground, all their attention focused on each other. This made it simple for the outsiders to part them. Mildred jabbed her opponent beneath the rib cage with a straight finger blow that sent a searing pain through the woman's kidneys and took her breath away. She folded onto one side and tried to throw her balance over to compensate. Her opponent could have used this to her advantage if she too hadn't also come under attack. Christy took a handful of the woman's hair and pulled back. With a gasp of surprise and sudden pain, the older woman jerked her head back, leaving her throat and neck exposed. Christy wasn't slow in following up. Still grasping the older woman's hair firmly, she chopped at the exposed windpipe, cutting off the woman's breath. It was all she could do to stop herself from blacking out at the sudden shock, slumping against Christy and almost throwing her off balance. But Christy yielded to the slump and then pushed back, reversing the momentum so that her opponent was thrust away from her. As the older woman careened away, Christy still kept hold of her hair, using it to twist the woman's head and deliver a punch to her temple that caused her to fall the rest of the way into unconsciousness. She dropped like a stone as Christy let go. Mildred was in the process of finishing off her opponent. Doubled with agony and with no breath in her body, the younger of the two Mandrake women turned to face Mildred, her face contorted by pain and rage. She made to grab at the black woman's swinging plaits, but Mildred was too quick, dodging her grasping hands and swinging up her leg in the same movement, catching her opponent in the abdomen with the toe cap of her heavy boot. As the woman pitched forward, Mildred finished her off with a blow to the back of her neck, delivered with the straight edge of her right hand. Before both Mandrake women had settled in the dust, Christy and Mildred were back to back, ready for the rest of the pack. The attack didn't come. Instead, there was a sudden hush, and the other women stood around, not knowing what to do, or who would be the first to break forward. Mildred stalled them.
Listen to me. I don't know what that was about, and I don't care. I just know that we're here to keep the peace, and if it means beating the shit out of every last one of you, then that's what we'll do. But you don't give us crap, and everything'll be fine. You understand me?
There was a silence, followed by a low rumble that could have been a grudging assent, but was certainly not the opposite.
That's okay, then.
Mildred and Christy relaxed slightly, then made their way back to their mounts.
Just remember that, and we'll have no argument with the people of Mandrake.
As soon as Christy and Mildred were on horseback, Crow kicked his steed into motion, and they left the narrow street in the Mandrake sector of the camp with a grudging respect, or possibly resentment, behind them.
That was impressive. They'll be looking out for you now. Maybe need to watch your backs from some, but you'll get less shit from others.
That was the general idea.
The rest of their journey around the camp was less eventful. The sectors that housed the people from Water Valley and Running Water, they had already encountered on their journey into the camp with Baron Silas. There was nothing new for them to learn from there as of yet. Moving on, they came to the sector where the people from Salvation itself were housed. It came as no surprise to anyone that they had the best-constructed home site. The huts and shacks were put together from a better quality of salvaged material, and the manner in which they had been constructed suggested that a village of engineers had been at work. Even the tents were of a stronger fabric, which looked as though it had been chosen with care from that available to make a series of movable homes that could be transported and re-erected with ease. Ryan and JB, in particular, had to admire the way in which the Hostville had managed its section of the camp. Crow was well known here, and it soon became apparent from the comments they met with that word of this new sec force had spread among the natives of Salvation. The companions were told that it was up to them to stop the sabotage and keep the jack bonuses going up for the workers and their families.
One thing I do notice, though, they all blame different bills for the damage, just as the woman from Hague blamed someone else.
Could be bluffing. Could be that they want to blame someone else to cover themselves. Could be they want to blame someone else just because they're different.
Yeah, and it could be that no one there actually knows anything about it.
Crow looked at JB shrewdly.
Ideas?
The armorer shrugged.
Not yet.
But he continued to think about it as they traveled around the rest of the camp. They had already seen the work sites and knew the layout. It was hard for anyone to hide there, and so the sabotage had to be perpetrated at a time when everyone not involved on the task would be safely out of the way. There was too much risk of anyone being seen during daylight and working hours, as not only were there sec patrols, but also it was highly unlikely that any of the individuals involved would want to sabotage their own areas of work and so put their own jack bonuses at risk. Other areas and other workers' bonuses, maybe, but only a stoop would do that to himself. And JB was sure that this was not the work of a stoop. So, if the sabotage couldn't be done by day, then it had to be done by night. By necessity, the sec patrols at night were concentrated on the camp to stop any fights that may break out inside. This left the work site relatively open to attack. But the problem any saboteurs would then have was in getting out of the camp, going about their tasks, and getting back into the camp without being seen, if not by the sec, then by someone from a rival ville. The fact that no one seemed to have any definite facts within such a closed hothouse atmosphere made JB wonder if Baron Silas and his sec men were looking in the wrong direction. As this passed through his mind, he wondered if he should talk to Ryan about it, so they could begin asking questions. But one look at the one-eyed man riding next to Crow dissuaded him. It wasn't that the armorer didn't trust the Native American. It was more that he didn't want anything of his notion getting out, particularly to Baron Silas, until they had a chance to investigate its validity. Besides, there were still four sectors of the camp with which to become familiar. Crow led them into the sector that housed the workers and their families from the Ville of Dallas. It was immediately obvious to all that Baron Silas had deliberately planned the camp so that the poor folks of his original home ville would have their noses rubbed in the dirt by being placed next door to the richer constructions of his new ville. For the Dallas camp was dirty and disheveled, and the women and children who were on view seemed downtrodden. They had no life or energy, and appeared to be almost completely disinterested in the mounted party as they rode down the small streets of the camp. Their huts and tents were hovels that hung loosely together, constructed of materials that the other villes would have thrown away, and completely devoid of color under a mantle of dust.
I fear these are least likely to be our culprits.
Could be that they want revenge.
No, my dear child. These are people with the fight knocked out of them. They just want the scraps from the table, though they do appear to be the kind of whipping boys who would be singled out for blame should it need to be apportioned.
No one believe it. Smell of fear, being chilled. Quarry.
I'd agree with you there. Thing is, for a variety of reasons, everyone I've shown you so far would be too obvious. Dallas is too downtrodden. The people of Water Valley and Running Water look too different to hide easily. Pig is too strictly run, and Mandrake is too damn loud to do anything except out front.
And Salvation?
The enemy inside? Possibly, but there's too much for everyone to lose. These last three bills, though, they don't look different, so they could blend in easy. And they've all got reason to hate the other bills, and each other.
Yeah?
Ryan stopped his horse.
Fill us in with some background before we look them over.
Carter, Baker, and Hush are basically parts of the same old pre-dark stock. They have common stories relating to oil jack from before the new cost. Like a lot of areas that were old well places, they're very white, which means they hate the bills that aren't. And even Mandrake they hate because of its pre-dark allegiances. They're also pissed because they aren't rich, and because Salvation will be. Never mind that their barons have done this to get a share of the jack. They don't think like that. And they're close to those they hate, and the place that represents their being.